Okay, a story, a PUL or whatever, or just general, I'm looking at Miyazaki now and getting inspiration. So now it's Howl's Moving Castle, and of course we are here in a kind of fantasy world, but I think it's called, whatever it is, that's the word for it, mixed. But my idea was, because we're going to have the other world, the Bovar, and here, for instance, it's about the wizard and witches and spells and magic transforming each other into strange beings, and someone here has been transformed into a fire. So, well, let's presume, and I think it could be that way, and the world's higher than this one, less. Locked up in gross matter. That this freedom, that kind of dynamics or whatever could be there, you know, that you gather your chi or energy, mental energy, whatever, and then you can use that. That's the strength, the power that you use. Here we see that, or we perceive it that way, that power is applied through physical means. You have to have a strong material body, physical body, and or strong big weapons, right? But all that body does and those weapons do is to apply force somehow. Now, what is that force? That's, I would say, the Chinese and Indian knowledge there, and also one that the quantum physicists least I believe so from reading them, started to see. But matter is not as Max Planck said, it's a structure of little atom pieces, making it into something objective. Even said it's like matter doesn't exist, but it's rather force fields, and it all points to the presence of consciousness. That's Max Planck, the father of quantum physics. You can find the quote online if you have lost it. So this way we can put that one in here somehow. But anyway, now I'm really looking at a possible scenario here, maybe even a reality. because again, we're looking at chi, prana. I really think we can, of course, that's a very nice, how to say, focus, because it's something real, and very many people on this planet can agree on that. I don't know how to go into this. I could maybe use this for this general knowledge of cosmology, whatever. No, but something. But we weave this into the story. So yeah. The force that is actually there that holds forms of matter together, physical things. And then that force, whether in the form of kinetic energy, as we call it, of a club coming down on your head, or applied with intelligence, and imagination, meaning that image, right? You make a form in your mind how you want it, how it should work, what it should do, and then you project that form from your mind out into the world, the so-called objective world, the collective world there. And if you're powerful enough and know how to use force, these energies, then you can make that thing appear out of, as it seems, nowhere, but actually out of that force. Now, we could just take that, because what I was actually describing now is how technology works, science, as you call it. First you have an engineer or an inventor coming up with an idea. Oh, maybe we can make a machine that does that and that works that way. And drawings, a lot of imagining and drafting and mathematics and geometry and construction work on the in the mind and intellect, right? And then that person or those persons who came up with that go and they want to get the power, the force. May the force be with us so we can push this form out from our drawing table and our minds, our intellects, into actual forms, physical forms, so they approach someone in possession of such forces. Maybe some rich guy with a big factory or whatever. And they set them into motion, either a bunch of workers or big machines powered by super strong electricity or charcoal or whatever, nuclear energy. And it produces that thing. whether that thing in itself is meant to heal the world or destroy it. So, what I just described was what we call technology, but which someone could as well call magic, because you're just imagining something and then making it appear. That's what magic is, isn't it? To pull the rabbit out of the hat. So we can use this in our story. And explain it, just the way I did now, by someone on Earth. Maybe that's on the Rick level, because he is, of course, expert in quantum physics and all that. And yes, he could also because he gets into these continuously more secretive and strange compartments, labs hidden, you know, out in the Nevada desert or whatever, and in other even stranger places. We can let our imagination go wild south, you know, Antarctic, mountain dungeons, or what, you know, whatever, which probably they would have down there. I mean, come on. Maybe that's where all the top leaders go into their bunkers. Super. And the rich people, oh, that would be something for this film or this whatever. That the super duper rich, the 1% or whatever it is now, they have, of course, super money if they can go to shoot up a rocket to the moon and, you know, all kinds of things. They could, of course, go to, and in secret too. It's no problem to do things in secret today, contrary to what the big mass of ignorant peasants believe. So they make this real smooth operation, shipping over lots of building material, this and that, machinery, huge helicopters that can lift a house. They just get there across the ocean at night. Nobody notices it because they know military covert operation stuff, you know. There, you can get anyone because you're the richest man in the world, so they get all these black ops experts, you know. They can make a whole thing. And then they ship with this whole armada of those helicopters. They ship over this huge amount of building materials and building machinery and just construct an underground indoor center, you could say. That's a bunker, come on, that's the Second World War. You know, you have entire cities on Earth most modern ones, sporting so-called indoor centers that are in themselves complete biospheres. With nice apartments around beautiful squares. Just like the indoor centers that we have. With all these shops and the restaurants and cool enjoyment places, anything you could think of enjoying. You even got the plants and indoor parks. You wouldn't miss anything in your life living there. You could live the whole lifetime there. Plenty of beautiful people of all sexes and genders and all whatever that you, Mr. or Mrs. Billionaire, can dream up to secure your joyful life for the rest of a long and joyful life. So, of course, you need a lot of money to do that, so but they have. And what what's the use of using the money for anything else but first of all that, to get a long and secure life with all the enjoyments that you desire. What else should I use my money for? That's how they think. So they spend enormous amounts of money. And here we can get into, bring up that point that there is a hidden parallel world economy, which I got from that documentary about the city of London and so on, and the offshore. We're just bringing that whole thing. And, you know, they're tapping into that, of course. It's their economy, really, and it's a club or a gang or what to call it, of even higher super beyond these billionaires that we call them. So if you are well connected to the right ones up there, you can play in that game. If not, they can finish you off in a minute. Make you the most hated person in the world, or just somebody who has an accident and, or whoops, killed himself. So, you know, that's then how the world looks like in our story here. And they go there and they build those centers down there. And not only that country, but the other one and the other billionaires. So there's a whole completely hidden nation almost there with these underground cities. And then maybe, you know, they may be friends too. Why, you know, they are. So there are chances of peace. Of course, then the Russians come there and they do the same thing. They're oligarchs. But, you know, we'll live with that. So in this way, you have on the South Pole an entire copy, basically, of planet Earth under the snow. It's very handy. You can hide everything completely. Or just a rock there, which is actually a nice entrance concealed as a rock. So we can really get into that. And so they are doing their things there. And why in the world, how I got into that from the magic and all that. I said that technology is also like magic, you can say. It's just, having the ability to force your eyes. First of all, have a clear image that what you want to create, and keep it in your mind, make it more and more solid and substantial and solid and working. And when you have it like that, now it could work out there. Then you push it out there by pushing around the energy, the forces that are acting out there with whatever means are available, maybe big metal things that move back and forth and pumping and pushing, and but it's still a force in action, the same force actually. And then that force has bound up into, as you call it, certain places, into objects, right? Like, that's what it is. You take that force, and you know Einstein, he equals MC square, means that. That's what they realized back then, and we all put this in the story, that matter is force. Energy. So that's all that is going on here. And once you get that, then you can also easily understand and, how to say, reconcile or unify in understanding the Eastern and Western way of looking at the world. Because in India and China, they have all along been talking about not little Lego blocks, but the force, chi or prana. And maybe we should learn from those old wise cultures, rather than running around here proudly stealing from them. When Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada came over to England, I think it was, I'm not sure if this is a legend or if it's actually a factual story. It could be, actually, and I heard that it is, so you can check the facts, that he came to Britain, and because he was in his youth a Gandhi man, and who, of course, and they were, of course, working to kick out Britain from India. Obviously, because these young Indian men, intellectual, could see, and I guess people in general, how their home country, mother, Bharat, was systematically being plundered by those whiteys over there on the other side of the world. So he came to London after having started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is unarguably the largest piece of Indian Sanatan Dharma culture that has ever been exported globally. But that is another story. He then met with journalists and leaders in Britain. Maybe invited by gentlemen and ladies from the Indian community in London, which was even at that time rather well established financially and so on, if not politically. So he gets to speak. Now, in this, our story, we make it that way. Who he spoke to, actually, journalist or big top leader, it doesn't matter, because the top leaders could hear this talk. And he was asked, what has brought you here? What is it that you are bringing to us, or that you want from us here in Britain? Maybe with a little tinge of irony there, that you often find from British people, and I guess especially towards Indians. And maybe still in the 60s that could be heard, if not still today. Shame on you Brits if that is so. So, Prabhupada said, well, you British people, you came to India and you took our riches. One of which, the greatest diamond in the world, is sitting in the crown of your queen. He probably didn't say, but thought. But you forgot something, our greatest riches. You see, it is often mentioned about learned ones in the all over the world, that the greatest treasure that India holds, the greatest resource, is the knowledge, the thousands and thousands of years old knowledge. The Vedic, the Sanatana Dharma. So I have come here to give you that. So now we are in that, you know, where going here and there, this story, and we have Rick there. Okay, that's who we were talking about. So he is there on the other side of, just that time actually it could be, on the other side of the planet, getting invited into these, because some or other, he's one of those guys who, first of all, is so brilliant, but he's also so innocent and quiet, and he looks really nerdy. So, actually, I thought he should be a total, complete nerd. And by many considered a bit autistic, maybe he is, and us be at least. And So everyone trusts him. He's the most trustworthy person in the nation, basically. And therefore he gets up there and is incredibly... Yeah, that's how he came into these underground paradises in the South Pole. And then... Because he has to do some job there. I mean, they're building these and they need computer experts and whatever. So he can move around there because he has other duties too in different countries for these super top level secret governments, which he... we can make it fun here. But someday we'll have this discussion. Are there any conspiracies or not? If you think there's a conspiracy that there is someone hidden here invisibly ruling us, then you're a conspiracy theorist. So, which of course, that very sentence just spoken there that you hear echoing all over media today, that sentence was planted in their minds by those same conspirators that are in control of that media and can basically read the minds of everyone connected to it now and mold those minds. We can make that into the story too. And Rick is one of those who's working on developing that technology. So he's, because all these fancy technology that they use, conspiracy or not, are developed, must be developed by these geniuses, and you must be able to trust those geniuses. So he's doing, he's hacking his computer and he's working like mad. But he's so quick because he's so smart and he does it, he's got extra time over anyway, which he uses for studying in philosophy. So then he reads maybe an article there where Prabhupada says these things, and he's just laughing, and in this way he finds Prabhupada, or something like that. And he realizes a lot by that simple statement, and really starts studying Indian knowledge, and realizes it is indeed an incredible treasure. And here you've got the chi and the prana and the... I just make another recording now, just in case it breaks or something.